This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Kusu Chuang and Philip C. First, we recap how global markets ended trading yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
So U.S. markets staged a recovery. The Dow was up 0.3%, S&P 500 up 0.4%, and Nasdaq up 0.5%. Also, generally Asia, mixed picture. Nikkei was down 1.1%, Hang Seng down 0.6%, Shanghai Composite remains closed, Singapore up 0.5%, while FBM KLCI closed up 1.8%, driven by plantation and oil gas counters.
All right. And to better understand what markets are reacting to, we have on the line Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, good morning. So looking over to the U.S., a compromise seems to have been reached with the U.S. Democrats accepting a short-term increase in the debt ceiling. Probably a case of kicking the can down the road, but do you think disaster has been averted?
I think you took the words out of my mouth about the cans. And we're forming a patchwork of a cobble path. It's still going to be a bit of brinksmanship. I think they'll still bring it to the brink. Along the way, we'll be buying time. But I think markets are not overly spooked, primarily because they've watched different iterations of this movie before. And I think they are somewhat confident, if not complacent, that the U.S., when push comes to shove, will not allow itself to default. So that, I think, is not really the overriding fear or anxiety in markets. I think what they want to see is the size of the fiscal stimulus, infrastructure plan, so on and so forth that they can settle on, and the financing behind it, which will have further reach on debt ceiling implications, as we cast our eyes out.
Yeah, and Vishnu, what's been driving the recent spike in U.S. Treasury yields? And has there been a read across in terms of the recent slump in equity markets?
Well, I think the USD yields are responding to a few things. On the cost push side, they're looking at inflation going higher, particularly accentuated by energy prices. And I think USD yields, historically, the correlation with energy price is pretty high. The oil price pass through to inflation expectations are high, and USD yields tend to track this quite closely. So that's one issue that I think is not lost in them, particularly given that right now we are at a very strange place where USD yields are exceptionally low with respect to where inflation expectations are. Inflation expectations are well over 2%. USD yields are hovering about 1.5%. So that catch-up trade is easy to do. But the other thing here is also that I think we've seen some good enough U.S. numbers such as the ISM services and the ADP employment data that keeps their eyes focused on the fact that taper could come in as soon as November. So they're also prepping for that. Equity markets, on the other hand, I think are caught between two forces. One is general optimism about demand that ought to buoy everyone. But I think the cutting edge of inflation probably is causing some reordering, relegating tech stocks in favor of the energy utilities counters as well as those that have got pricing power.
I mean, you say reordering, but I guess it's implied higher volatility. So, one would expect a flight back to greenback as a safe haven. Where do you see US dollar trading against other currencies, particularly the euro and the yen?
Well, the US dollar is going to react to a few things. One, I think, is it's still going to be highly driven by real yields on a sustainable basis. So we need to continue to see nominal yields moving higher with respect to inflation expectations, and that would be a very durable support for dollar. And that picture is falling into place. We are beginning to see that from quite a few weeks ago, 1.3%. We're now seeing 1.5% USD yields, perhaps headed to 1.6 to 1.7. So that's one factor. The other also is, I think, a read of how willing the Fed is to carry forward on normalization. So if markets read that taper will start later this year, mid next year, wind down QE completely, and then start on rate hikes as early as Q3 next year, then again, I think that will also give a bit of a lift to US, the dollar against the euro and the yen. It may be clearer against the euro. Against the yen, it might be somewhat distorted due to bouts of risk aversion where the yen may compete with the dollar for the position of a safe haven.
And then Vishnu, of course, in between, you know, this golden period where rates rise and, you know, this vaccination journey, you know, obviously starts to gather momentum. What's your view of the economic reflation theme in emerging markets and developed markets, especially as we enter into the Christmas season? How strong is the economy?
Well, I think we are probably not going to get a very nice feel of the economy overall. Certainly, it'll be a story of the blind man feeling the elephant. I almost said feeling up and sounded wrong about it. But here's the thing. I think we'll find, you know, selectively some of the exports markets may do well as demand recovery comes back into the picture and the seasonal year-end exports start picking up. But we'll also see a lot of soft spots continuing to linger for two reasons. One is in terms of the big picture, not Malaysia per se, but outside of Malaysia and Singapore, I think vaccination rates are relatively low compared to other parts of the world, which means that the domestic services sector could be very weak. The other sector, of course, is those sectors that are hit by this sudden cost push and can't pass it on may also not fare as well. So there would still be quite a bit of a bumpiness and turbulence around some of the pickup sectors that we see heading into the end of the year.
And Vishnu, I guess turning our attention to China, we do still see Evergrande making headlines. Do you think we'll see a blowout of credit spreads across the Asian region as a result of the continuing debt fallout from Chinese developers?
This risk continues to loom large, even if you know some of the headlines now shift focus and distract us from it with the power crunch, so on and so forth. One of the big issues here really is that there is no respite for Evergrande. And by extension, the wider property sector, primarily because even asset sales do not address the problem that they cannot fulfill their liquidity, their cash flow obligations and balance sheet risks remain. And collateral values also being pressured, that's to say the values you can extract out of using bonds or equities in these companies as collateral means that there's going to be the risk of a false liquidation across the board that triggers cross defaults. And by extension, that means that at least the Chinese property sector or the high-yield property sector could see credit spreads blowing up. Where this becomes a bigger risk is when it is no longer seen as being ring-fenced, and then it drags down wider Asia with it. And that remains a risk that we cannot just dismiss lightly.
I mean, you're saying this ring-fencing and that it could basically spread. So I want to just get your perspective. What do you think will be the outcome in next week's Singapore's Monetary Authority meeting? You know, what do you expect the policy outcomes to be and exchange rates?
You know, at the risk of sounding like a dove, I expect no change to the policy because given the recovery this time, after six quarters since the flattening of the slope, which is really the most dovish policy that is there. The MAS has not, or rather the Singapore's economy has not grown very much at all. It's less than that of GFC for the comparable six quarters. So there's no real reason to hasten it. But MAS is known to be quite ahead of the curve. So this is where it is a close call. But regardless, because the calibration in tightening will be very light, there will be no real shift or no immediate shift in the policy bands of the trade-weighted Singapore dollar. And by extension, that means that, ironically, MAS will have far less sway on the Sing dollar than the broader dollar trends and what we see going on in the interest rate markets.
Vishnu, thanks as always for speaking to us. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us his take on what's happening in U.S. markets and the economy, as well as what to expect when the Singapore Monetary Policy Meeting, Singapore's Monetary Authority, convenes next week.
Yeah, I just got the impression that Vishnu was quite measured in terms of his expectations. Mm. You know, as we go into the end of the year, lots of, you know, obviously Bloomberg uses the word a panoply of, hindrances to the economy and to the markets. But definitely, right, oil prices, the debt ceiling, you know, rising interest rates. But that all hasn't happened yet. Do you know what I mean? There is still money funding the government. Rates won't rise till the third quarter of next year. We are entering the fourth quarter of the season, which is obviously Christmas season. There's huge expectations for economic reflation. Markets have just come off this temper tantrum for the last 1 week. There's every potential that it's going to go up again, and I'm hoping that there's going to be some kind of recovery. So there's a lot of things to look forward to.
I mean, you know, well, he was not so optimistic in my view. He has a kind of a holding pattern.
That's right.
View. And you said it very nicely, which is there are all these risks being identified.
Yeah.
So many of these, right? Whether they will materialize is another question altogether.
Yeah.
For example, the whole point of U.S. debt. right?
Every year is the same thing.
It's the same thing, right? Same about government thing. Shutdown. And this is not the first time we've seen it before. And that's why, you know, we are not surprised and why markets reacted very well when the Democrats have already signaled they're probably going to accept the olive branch offered by the Republicans to extend the debt up to December.
Or they could mint the platinum coin and make it a $10 trillion coin and then, you know, done. You guys have heard about that, right? The platinum coin?
No, tell me more.
Which is within the Federal Reserve's remit to actually print. And then they can just mint that one coin, which is a face value of a trillion or 10 trillion. And then you're done. And then it's because it's all paper, right? At the end of the day, it's just currency, which is paper currency. It's got no, I guess, asset value behind it because they took it off the gold standard in 1974. So,
I'm shaking my head. It's a tempting theory, again, there are just too many realities.
Every year when the debt ceiling discussion comes up, you know, this idea comes up as well.
All right. Well, looking at just some quick other headlines that in the making, can we take a look at oil? So we have OPEC announcing that it will stick to its existing pact for a gradual increase in oil supply, despite experiencing pressure from the U.S. and India to offer more supply. And this has caused oil prices to climb to multi-year highs, with energy analysts opining that crude prices could rally towards $100 a barrel. This was pretty unheard of just, you know, last year or even a few years back.
I mean, if you remember, in the start of the pandemic, it was close to zero, right? So, I mean, both Brent and WTI contracts now are up around 60% higher since the beginning of the year. But, you know, this is, I think, where it's a bit shocking, right? They still maintain to its agreed decision made in July to just add only about 400,000 barrels a day to the market for November. And this agreement will last up to April 2022, right, to phase out 5.8 million barrels a day of existing output cuts. So, you know, for me, so many questions, you know, what's the thought process behind OPEC doing this? And we had a conversation yesterday about this as well, right, which is about the economics to do this. But $90, it really is positive and profitable.
I think we are seeing headlines out of the US as well, where the government there is thinking of releasing their oil reserves if the oil price gets too high. So again, you know, we're experiencing all these different trends.
There's an energy crunch. There's a supply chain crunch. I think the Californian ports, I can't remember what it's called, they got like something like 65 tankers waiting in the water, waiting to unload their stuff. It's a big thing because demand is just really, you know, really ramped up. And the supply chains haven't been, you know, they've all been, the taps have been turned off. Supply chains have been turned off because of the pandemic. And it is what it is.
Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.